Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for the vacationing Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual, and all of them have something to do with either guns or the mass murder in Charleston, South Carolina. Ian, we start with the good, and that's that despite what we see in these tragedies from time to time, there is a spike usually in the wake of something like a Sandy Hook, like an Aurora, like Columbine, even going back that far, of people who instinctively want to do something more to restrict access to guns. But over time, whenever it's President Clinton or President Obama now, more recently, as time fades, people realize that restricting Second Amendment rights is not the answer. It's obviously a very tough subject. It's a tough debate, especially in the wake of something so emotionally raw. But it seems, based on numbers produced by 538 over the past 25 years, that not only do these spikes always come down, that when we're not in one of these stories, it's fewer and fewer Americans who think gun control is the answer to reducing violence.
Yeah, so you see, just like you said, sort of a spike in initial concern and then a tapering off. And I think part of that is, just like you said, the emotions that surround these incidents. But often what comes out, as we've seen, we saw this in Newtown, we saw this in the wake of Charleston, is the facts show that the gun control proposals, and you and I talked about this last week, wouldn't have had any effect. What Democrats or what President Obama in his term have proposed after each of these shootings wouldn't have mattered. None of the gun control proposals would have stopped events like these. There's a larger point to be made here about the culture, which is we have a strong pro-Second Amendment culture that is just set against the diminution of any sort of right to bear arms or right to keep weapons in the interest of one's own self-defense. Look, you have 400 million guns, they estimate, in the United States. There's simply no way to really control that incredible number except to go door to door and start picking them up. And what you've seen in American history, back to colonial days, is a belief that the people have the right to defend themselves. So these gun control proposals usually don't work simply because we have a long history of a firm belief in having the right to defend one's own property, defend oneself against an overbearing government, etc. If you wanted gun control proposals to succeed, first you're going to have to change that culture. And thankfully, people look at these incidents and they draw, it seems, usually the right conclusions, which is that people need the right to defend themselves and will help to reduce the number of these tragedies if we have people who can fight back, whether it's against a lunatic in a mass shooting or at the very extreme against an overbearing government.
Ian, let's move to the bad martini now. And obviously coverage of what happened in Charleston dominated the national media over the last half of last week, and it was discussed on a number of weekend programs as well. One of which was Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO, and as most conservatives would expect, he didn't exactly have the most unbiased take on this. Here's what he had to say in mocking coverage, particularly on Fox News and among Republicans in general.
On Fox News, they could not decide if this was absolutely not the right time to talk about guns or absolutely not the right time to talk about racism. And yet, you know, the shooter purposefully went to a black church. He told the victims that he had to do it because they were taking over. He wore pro-apartheid stickers on his jacket. His friend said he was big into segregation. He talked about starting a race war. So naturally, when it comes to what motivated him, Republicans are stumped.
Ian, this is the height of irresponsible reporting, although I use that word extremely loosely in the case of Bill Maher. It is true that the morning that this story broke, that Fox News did wonder whether this was perhaps an attack more on Christians than on race, but that's largely because we didn't know the story at that point. The shooter was on the lam. There obviously has been a ton more reporting and more revealed since then, so While those statements factually might have some nugget of truth to them, in context, he's being very deceptive
here. Absolutely. So there's been this meme on the left that Fox and others on the right didn't leap out last Thursday morning to condemn this. And it's exactly as you say, because the information was still coming in. So at 7 a.m., Fox News didn't say absolutely everything that Bill Maher wanted them to say. But by 7 p.m., Bill O'Reilly was saying this was racist terrorism on a par with Al-Qaeda. And not only in the media, but the political candidates have been uniform about condemning this as racism. There's just – it's simply a lie to say that there was any sort of hesitance on the right with reasonable information having come in to paint this as something other than what it was. The additional problem here of Bill Maher, usually to his rare credit, he's often at least reasonable on issues of free speech and violence. He's been one of the few people on the left who's been willing to call a spade when it comes to Islamic terrorism. But then you have this bizarre outburst in which, rather than looking at the shooter in all of his horror, you have this effort to paint the shooter's motivations as stemming from a right-wing culture of racism and sort of gentle neo-Nazism. It's simply a lie. It's irresponsible. And it doesn't do any good in actually moving the country forward or moving communities forward that may be experiencing real racial tension. This is just ginning up an audience with false narratives for cheap laughs that ends up doing a lot more harm than good. And for Maher and any others, Salon and others who've been promoting this, shame on them.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And it was a very interesting week for Pope Francis. He, of course, came out with his highly anticipated encyclical on the environment, where he essentially said there is a scientific consensus that humans are contributing to the changing climate, and that differences need to be made in our habits. We need to take steps to alleviate poverty as well. That obviously was politically controversial in the United States and elsewhere. And apparently he wasn't done, because he was in Turin, Italy, speaking to a group of young people there, and he ended up talking about weapons. Quote, "It makes me think of people, managers, businessmen who call themselves Christian and they manufacture weapons. That leads to a bit of distrust, doesn't it?" he said to applause. He also criticized those who invest in weapons industries, saying, quote, "Duplicity is the currency of today. They say one thing and do another." He also talked about the situation back in World War II, where he said, quote, "The great powers had the pictures of the railway lines that brought the trains to the concentration camps like Auschwitz to kill Jews, Christians, homosexuals, everybody. Why didn't they bomb those?" So, Ian, it's kind of rare to see so many different political statements from the Pope in such a short period of time. And it's also interesting to see Catholics, who are usually very deferential, those who disagree with him politically, not too shy to say so in these last couple of weeks.
Two sort of preliminary notes. One is, let's assume that the Pope has been translated correctly, because that's always sort of a an issue when it comes to papal reporting. Well, did he say that? Did he say that exactly? But let's just assume that it's correct here. The second note is that the Pope is, even in the encyclical, is speaking as a leader with prominent moral authority, but not in the Pope's infallible voice. So we're not talking about questions of doctrine. But all of that aside, Pope Francis has shown a great spirit of charity. He's doing a lot of good, reaching out to the poor all over the world and bringing those who may have been disenfranchised or in the shadows into the spotlight. But you kind of want him to stop talking after a while. This latest comment on guns and Christians and weapons manufacturing strikes one as just enormously politically naive. There certainly is a streak of pacifism that's existed within the Catholic Church. It's existed within Protestant Christianity as well. There have been those who've given a reasonably coherent and cogent argument for a strictly pacifist Christianity. Stanley Hauerwas, the theologian at Duke, comes to mind. But that's not what seems to be happening in this latest comment with the Pope. There's just this this sort of knee-jerk, well, these things might make me uncomfortable. There's no way to sort of tie these things together given what sounds like just sort of ramblings off the top of his head. And what it does, unfortunately, is it diminishes his moral authority, particularly given the fact that he's surrounded by papal guards who are carrying, you know, submachine guns. It reduces the dignity, the office. I think of Margaret Thatcher was on a television talk show where apparently the host would have the guest hop, just a little hop, you know, to make them look more human or relatable or whatever it is. And Margaret Thatcher staunchly refused. She said it's beneath the dignity of the prime minister to do this. She held to herself more dignity, more moral authority and gravity than the Pope has in many of his political and frankly naive statements over the course of his papacy thus far. And you just sort of want him to take a breath and listen rather than talk after a while.
Just one closing point I'd like to get your reaction to. You know, we talked on Friday about the inconsistency of the left on a variety of things. It was in relation to the Huck Finn story and the teacher suspended out in Los Angeles, which is our crazy martini last Friday. Check it out in the archives, of course. In this case, anytime the Pope says something that upholds or cherishes the traditional family, the liberal media basically waves him away and says, well, you know, get with the times. But when he says something they like about climate change or gun manufacturing, well, everyone needs to sit up and take notice.
Absolutely. Some of the left-wing reactions coming out of actually reading the encyclical were just stunned to note that the first big chunk of it pertained to the Catholic Church's vehement opposition to abortion. You know, this isn't the Pope Francis that we like and adore. There certainly is that element of the left picking and choosing what they like about him, but there is also the problem of the Pope seeming to be inconsistent on a number of things. You know, like I said, he's surrounded by guards with weapons. You know, presumably some of them are Christians, and you'd have to think that except from a strict view of pacifism, which the Catholic Church, to my knowledge, doesn't hold, in certain circumstances they would, in fact, by firing, be doing the Lord's work. So what do you do with that?
Ian, another crazy day to start the week. Talk to you tomorrow.
That sounds good. Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.